It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Across the state, there is not that protection. And in fact, across the state, it is still legal to deny any public accommodation to a person based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, which that means not being allowed to book a room in a hotel or being served a dinner in a restaurant. And so we want to work with the General Assembly to do that. It's a very common sense measure to say if you open a business on Main Street, you're opening that business for everybody in the community. And also, if you employ people in that community, you're basing your employment decisions on the skills that person provides and the work that person does and not who they love or how they identify.
James Parrish, Executive Director of Equality Virginia, talks about the continuing discrimination faced by gays, lesbians, and transgendered persons in employment, housing, and public accommodations and how to overcome this. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about the housing discrimination complaint filed against the City of Richmond by more than 30 current and former Mobile Home Park residents. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 266, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last week, a group of more than 30 current and former Mobile Home Park residents filed a fair housing complaint against the City of Richmond after a year of trying to cooperate with the city. It was submitted to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, over the city's code enforcement campaign against mobile home parks. The group submitted the complaint to HUD with the help of the Legal Aid Justice Center in Richmond and the law firm of Crowell & Mooring in Washington, D.C. It alleges that the city's enforcement campaign discriminates by specifically targeting mobile home parks, where residents are mostly Latino. Instead of finding ways to help ensure they have safe housing, inspectors are threatening to shut down the only option many of these families can afford, according to Legal Aid Justice Center attorney Phil Story. The complaint describes ways the city has subjected mobile home residents to harsh enforcement actions. These include intrusive inspections with armed police escorts, threats to condemn homes or even bring criminal charges if residents don't allow inspectors inside, and unreasonable repair standards that make compliance unrealistic. Federal civil rights laws protect minorities and immigrants from policies that disproportionately threaten their access to housing, says Crowell & Mooring attorney Clifford Zatz. That's especially the case when the city could choose less disruptive ways to address safety concerns. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the population of Richmond is less than 7% Latino. The complaint estimates that over 70% of the residents in the city's mobile home parks are Latino. The filing describes multiple attempts since last summer by residents and area nonprofits to resolve the city's safety concerns without risking residents' access to housing. According to the complaint, the city has consistently rejected or withheld funding for these alternatives. The filing also alleges that the city has never made any coordinated effort to address the risk of homelessness and other crises created by condemnations, despite planning the enforcement campaign for years. Last July, the mayor's office admitted the need to provide assistance to residents, but the complaint describes the city's consistent refusal to follow through with help for the affected families. The complaint asks HUD to seek a court order to halt the city's enforcement campaign against mobile home parks. The residents state they want the city to pursue a collaborative, community-based approach to addressing safety issues rather than one based on threats. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the headquarters of Equality Virginia. We are speaking today with James Parrish, who is the Executive Director of Equality Virginia, and we will be speaking today about the challenges that still remain for LGBT people in obtaining full legal rights. Welcome to back to the show, James.
Thank you, and thank you for coming by the office today. We're happy to have you here.
We're very pleased to be here. And the last time that you were on the show, which was July of 2013, was just after the Supreme Court held the Federal Defense of Marriage Act to be unconstitutional. And I asked you at that time, how is marriage equality going to come to Virginia? And you posited that there were going to be federal lawsuits filed challenging the ban on same-sex marriage in Virginia, the constitutional ban, on equal protection grounds. That's exactly what happened. The U.S. District Court found the ban to be unconstitutional. That was affirmed by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. The Supreme Court declined to hear that case, and so marriage equality came to Virginia. Just last week, of course, the Supreme Court did take up argument on a nationwide basis, and we may be back in a couple of months talking about that. But that's not the end of the struggle for equality, and I wanted to talk to you about other issues dealing with LGBT people. And I guess the first deals with family law. Let me start with adoption. Is a same-sex couple permitted under Virginia law to adopt a child?
Yes, there has never been a ban against gay adoption in Virginia, but what we had was in the code, it only allows for single people or married people to adopt children. So in the past, gay couples and lesbian couples weren't allowed, or at least their marriage wasn't recognized by our state, so only one person in that relationship could be the legal parent of the child. Now, post the marriage ruling last October, gay and lesbian couples who are legally married can jointly adopt now in the state, and that's and also those who adopt elsewhere, you know, their adoptions are recognized as well.
So the other question about family law is this. Several years ago, maybe a dozen or more years ago, there was a fairly awful decision by the Virginia Supreme Court dealing with custody and visitation. It was the Bottoms case. Mm-hmm. And that case basically seemed to say that being gay or lesbian was almost tantamount to being unfit as a parent. Now that we have, of course, marriage equality in Virginia, are we finding more equal treatment of gays and lesbians in custody fights in Virginia, in the courts?
Yeah, I think that, as you said, that was quite a few years ago. There will always be at the discretion of a judge on how he defines a parent as being fit, but you know, gladly, we have not heard of any other cases, and I think we've are in a different place as a commonwealth, that the majority of Virginians definitely don't feel that gay and lesbians raising children are unfit parents and therefore should not have those children.
And has that been one of the things that pushed the marriage decision along when it was filed and then ultimately successful in Virginia?
Yeah, I think if you look at the transcripts from the case that was the two cases that were held here in this state and then the tidal wave of court rulings that have happened since, there's lots of references actually to the harm that's done to children in these families. There's as much reference to that as there is even like due process of you should be able to have access to marriage because other people have access to marriage. I think the courts and are coming to understand that those gay and lesbian families raising kids, when those kids can't get on both parents' health care, when those kids don't have access to both parents' Social Security, when those parents can't even add each other to health care, and other legal rights and responsibilities that come with marriage, that those children are then being raised in a different situation than other married couples' children are.
So it's not only the gay or lesbian couple that's being denied equal protection of the law, it's also the children of those relationships.
Oh, yes. It's been made very clear in examples. There's a two-parent household where one is the breadwinner, but the stay-at-home parent is the legal parent of the child. Well, if the breadwinner, before we had marriage equality, if the breadwinner had passed, they couldn't pass on their Social Security benefits, neither to their partner nor to the child, who then is being raised by the parent who wasn't the breadwinner. And so there's been very clear examples of children being raised by lesbian gay parents where they were definitely being harmed by the state's lack of recognition of the child's parents' relationship. And I think, again, if you go back to quite a few of the court rulings since ours last fall, that is what judges have really finessed, that we are harming families.
And that's a good segue to the next topic I wanted to talk about, which are benefits that are available now to gay and lesbian couples, and are there still benefits that are not available? Let's start with, I guess, federal benefits.
Yes, so the DOMA ruling allowed that while states could still not recognize marriage, the original DOMA ruling a year and a half ago, the federal government can no longer do that. So the federal government immediately then put into plan where couples who were married had to file their taxes as married, but also especially military families and other federal employees over the past year and a half since the DOMA ruling, they've allowed federal couples, if you're employed by the federal government, to access insurance and other benefits that the other employees, federal employees, could already do. Since our marriage ruling, that's now blanketed to cover pretty much everything that we have. There's some situations where it hasn't been, an example hasn't been brought to us, but there are some situations where married same-sex couples aren't automatically available to all benefits a company provides, because we actually don't have a discrimination policy in Virginia that states that you can't discriminate against sexual orientation. But we haven't heard, thankfully, of any company that has said, no, we're only giving these benefits to our opposite-sex married couples and not our same-sex married employees. So that ruling just opened up a wave of access to Social Security, access to personal assets after when a partner dies. You know, although prior to this, gay and lesbian couples had to pay this estate tax because they were not treated as married. You have health insurance. We now have people that can get on their partner's health insurance and get access to health care that they couldn't before. And then, of course, all the benefits of raising children as a dual parent household.
Now, I remember when we spoke in July of 2013, right after the ruling striking down the Defense of Marriage Act, there was this two-tier test of benefits that were available based on the place of consecration of the marriage and benefits that were based on the residence of the parties, the current residence of the parties. Has that distinction pretty much gone by the wayside?
Yes. So in Virginia, that, with our marriage ruling, was completely upended. But the federal government had done a lot of work prior to that to change as many of those distinctions of, you're correct, there was the benefits based on place of marriage versus benefits based on where you live if your marriage was recognized. And the federal government, the Obama administration, did a really good job post-DOMA finessing as many of those rule changes as they could to say, if your marriage was a legally held ceremony wherever it was, then you are treated as married under federal law.
Now, you did mention benefits that are available not from the federal or the state government, but benefits that are available from private companies. From your answer, it seems that a private company still could potentially deny benefits to same-sex couples, even though they're available to opposite-gender couples?
Right. We've been told that because there isn't discrimination protections for people based on their sexual orientation, that there are some types of benefits, and it gets very complicated there, on dealing with life insurance policies and things like that, that not necessarily a company has to provide to all of its employees. And so a company could say that we provide these only to opposite sex and not same-sex married partners. But again, we have not seen or had anybody approach us having that problem. And we really think that our business community here in Virginia is definitely leaders on LGBT issues and want to participate in the modern economy. Our governor pushes that very hard. And so I would be hard-pressed to think of a leading company that would try to not allow access for everyone.
Which, again, is another good segue to the next issue I wanted to talk about was employment protections. I mean, people are probably mostly familiar with the classic type of employment discrimination that is prohibited, at least under federal law, basically discrimination based on an employee's race, religion, national origin, age, if you're 40 or older, gender or disability. What protections are there for employees based upon their sexual orientation?
There are no legal protections for employees in this state for people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. The governor signed Executive 1 when he came into office, which allowed for state employees cannot be discriminated against based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. The Attorney General just had a ruling about 5 weeks ago, tested next week in Fairfax County, saying that school boards actually do have the authority to protect their students and employees based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And the Fairfax County Public School System will be voting this Thursday, May 7th, on that very issue to add. They had already added sexual orientation to their non-discrimination policy and are voting to add gender identity. So they would be the first public government, piece of public government that actually has in their protections that you cannot discriminate. But go ahead.
Well, and so that executive order, that applies directly to state employees. Am I correct about that?
Yes, sir.
And it could apply to a local government, but only if the local government or a local school board chooses to do so.
So, yes, the AG's ruling said the local school governments have the authority to do so, but they must opt in. It was not an opinion that said automatically all school employees are protected. And then again, the governor's executive order only covers state employees, and it is a governor-by-governor action. Our previous Governor McDonald actually had taken sexual orientation, which had been put in by the previous two governors, Kane and Warner, when he came into office. So while we're very appreciative that the governor included gay and transgender people in his executive order protecting state employees from discrimination, again, it's a governor-by-governor decision, and that's why our General Assembly needs to do what our major leading corporations already do in the state and put in the code a non-discrimination policy that includes sexual orientation and gender identity. In fact, they need to put in a non-discrimination policy, period, because Virginia doesn't have one. You're only protected in the state because of federal law, but Virginia actually has never put in its own non-discrimination policy that includes race, religion, ethnicity, age, and the other protections already included in federal government.
And then the other area that I wanted to talk about is housing. Virginia does have a fair housing statute, and it prohibits discrimination in housing, both in terms of sales, advertising, rental, based upon an individual's race, color, which is a little bit different, religion, national origin, age, gender, familial status, which means having or not having children and also being pregnant, as well as disability or impairment. Again, conspicuously absent from that is discrimination based upon one's sexual orientation or sexual identity. Are there any protections here at all?
There are not, except for under the Obama administration, they have said if you are a apartment or housing complex and you accept federal housing dollars, that you cannot discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity and still get those dollars. So that does apply then to some apartment and leasing communities. We just wrapped up April, which was Fair Housing Month, and our Quality Means Business program, we were asking realtors and leasing agencies and apartment communities to sign up and become part of our Quality Means Business program. That's a very simple Main Street program where we ask businesses to have a non-discrimination policy for their employees that includes sexual orientation and gender identity, and also commit to serving gay and transgender customers. And so that was very successful, and the Quality Means Business program is available for everybody, but we were highlighting it in April because that was Fair Housing Month. But as you say, it's correct, Across the state, there is not that protection. And in fact, across the state, it is still legal to deny any public accommodation to a person based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, which that means not being allowed to book a room in a hotel or being served a dinner in a restaurant. And so we want to work with the General Assembly to do that. It's a very common sense measures to say, if you open a business on Main Street, you're opening that business for everybody in the community. And also, if you employ people in that community, you're basing your employment decisions on the skills that person provides and the work that person does and not who they love or how they identify.
Now, of course, in the news recently, there has been the cases, or really the statute passed by both Indiana and I believe Arkansas, the so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which tries to carve out an exception that says that, well, yes, if you're a public accommodation, you have to serve anybody who comes in your door because you held yourself out that way. But if you have a religious objection to doing so, you can. Has there been any groundswell of that coming up here in Virginia?
We had a similar bill introduced this General Assembly session by Delegate Marshall, which allowed for people to opt out of if they were opposed to some part of business based on their opposition to same-sex marriage or something similar. And that bill was easily defeated in our General Assembly. We expect that to be the case. Our business community doesn't want this. Again, they already include sexual orientation and gender identity in that. It's what I see as a way for some groups and some people to say, okay, the state might have to recognize your relationship now, but I don't. And frankly, if you're opening a business and opening your doors to the public, again, you're opening your business and your doors to everyone. And you don't get to decide who you can or will and will not serve. If that's the place you want to be, then you shouldn't have a business open to the public. And we definitely believe in the freedom to religion. And marriage, any marriage law that has come out from judges, none of those require any faith or house of worship to marry somebody that they would not marry as part of their religion or their belief in their faith. And that's what that means, separation of church and state, freedom of religion. And no one's asking for faith organizations who don't support same-sex marriage to be forced to marry people. But if you open that business on Main Street, then you've made the commitment to the community to serve everyone.
So it sounds like a lot of the work that needs to be done yet, especially in the areas of employment and housing, equality for due to sexual orientation and gender identity, really needs to be done in the General Assembly, which has not been terribly sympathetic in the past. Do you see that changing in the future? And the second part of that question is, if not, or perhaps in tandem with it, do you see possible court challenges that would get those types of employment protections and housing protections for people based upon sexual orientation and gender identity?
You're correct. The General Assembly looks to be the path to put in our code, our state code, protections for people based on their gender identity and sexual orientation. The General Assembly has also been a bit of a stumbling block when it comes to LGBT equality. However, each year, I have been here now 5 years, and each year I've seen more and more people in the House of Delegates want to move forward in a modern way on these issues. And I only expect that to continue. And I only expect, as more and more of our families are now legally married and legally recognized, the game changer in this, all of this, has always been changing hearts and minds. And the game changer has been knowing someone who's gay or knowing someone who's transgender. And so that's a quality of Virginia's work, to make sure we're continuing to share those stories. And as we do that, more and more people are in support of these policies and these laws. And at some point, we'll reach the tipping point of the General Assembly where they just can't say no when the rest of the state is saying yes.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with James Parrish. He is the Executive Director of Equality Virginia. We have been talking about the past and present and hopefully the future of equality for gays and lesbians and transgender people in Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. What are the most important factors in determining child custody? Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when family law attorney Sandra Bowen talks about how judges decide child custody cases in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on May 28, 2014. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.